please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.
Oi, Billy! Oscar! Dave! Get up! Francine Marie Show's on!
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Did you realize in North Carolina that you have 2 more years regarding the statute of limitations to come forward if you've been sexually abused? But a lot of people don't talk about it. But a lot of people do talk about the Catholic Church, the allegations of sexual abuse, victims coming forward, and priests being called out by name. The names of the priests that they released in Charlotte, North Carolina, are those priests still living? Are those priests still active? Is that list up to date and complete? Well, guess who we've got in the studio? It's a child advocacy attorney who has been working most of his career on behalf of victims who've been sexually abused. His name is Seth H. Langson. Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
I appreciate you coming by. Like, you are the man. You know where the bodies are. I'm just kidding.
Well, and the only reason I would know that is because I was in litigation with the Charlotte Diocese for over 10 years. Yes.
10 years.
Well, about 10 years. My first case was started in 2008, and it's over now, and others have ended, but I've continued to investigate them since 2008.
So who comes to you? The parents come to you? And
no, I mean, I represent all types of abuse victims. Usually, well, it depends. If the person's now over 18, they usually come to me to talk to me because it's their decision. They're an adult. Otherwise, often a parent will come to me and say something happened in school, like that. We go from there.
How did you get into this part of the law?
By accident, I suppose. I mean, I was always wanted to do law work where I'd help people. I had a general practice, primarily personal injury, representing sort of a small person. I got referred a case by a therapist who had this patient who'd been sexually abused by her psychiatrist. This was back in the 80s, and it was a tough case because it was too old a case. Statute of limitations on the face of it had run and been turned down by a lot of lawyers. But I ended up ultimately taking the case. The case got settled before trial, but we were pretty successful, and it got a lot of publicity because it was a very high-profile case. And then I just started getting other referrals. And once you start doing sex abuse cases, they're tough to stop.
And finally, we're talking about it. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, we didn't talk about it too much.
Well, and back then, there was so much stuff to convince people it actually happened because they couldn't see any injuries. They couldn't see the scars or something like that. So trying to get a jury to give you, or the insurance adjuster to give you what you thought was anything close to what the damages were, was extremely difficult.
You know, even to get your family to accept the news that a family member has sexually abused, for them to believe it.
Right.
Right. So don't disgrace our family. You know, that used to be the thing.
Well, with clergy, everybody was scared to come forward and they wouldn't be believed. It's, you know, man of God, that sort of thing.
Okay. So let's talk about the names of the priests that were credibly accused. Why did they use that word?
Because it's their own term. The dioceses around the country have been under pressure to release the names of the credibly accused. That's a term they've used forever. Because, you know, they say, well, we shouldn't have to release the names of somebody if there's just an unfounded, just one person made this accusation. So they've done that. The problem is the Catholic Church, unlike the rest of us, they're choosing to be their own judge and jury because they're saying we'll make the determination as to whether it was a credible accusation before we let the outside world see it. Normally, you get the accusations, they would go to law enforcement, etc., and they would investigate, and they'd say there's nothing to it or there's something to it. But the Catholic Church refuses to let the outside authorities make that initial determination.
Refuse. What if a family goes outside the church?
Well, they can. I encourage them to. I mean, I know the diocese has a new hotline. They've publicized about when they release the names, about call us and give us reports. They're the last people I would call to give reports.
They can't police themselves.
Right. And priests can get transferred. Priests can be told that there's an accusation made so they can then on their own cover their tracks. No, you go to the police first. Contact a lawyer and help. Or you go to the police. A lawyer can help you, you know, set up the interview with the detective. I've done that, and I get out of the picture.
Okay. So that works.
Yeah.
You go to the police.
It's worked.
Make a report.
Yes. I strongly encourage everybody to go to the police.
Okay. If you're just not tuning in, we're talking to child advocate attorney. It's Seth H. Langson, and that's L-A-N-G-S-O-N. You've been doing this for quite some time, and thank you.
Since the mid-80s.
Thank you for doing that for us. Because, like you said in the beginning, a lot of attorneys don't want to touch such cases.
Well, they didn't for years. Now they're getting more popular because attorneys see that this might be more lucrative. It's unfortunately true, but if there are a lot of victims coming forward in other states against churches and stuff where they've extended the statute of limitations, then other attorneys who've never done sex abuse cases are going to try to get into those cases because all the hard work's been done.
Break down the statute of limitations that I opened the show with.
Let's distinguish, first of all, between a criminal statute of limitations and a civil statute of limitations. Criminal is how long can somebody be prosecuted after the crime occurred. So in North Carolina, there is no statute of limitations for felonies. So for any sex abuse, any time a person, you know, if it happened 60 years ago, but you got the defendant now, as long as you can prove it, you can prosecute him. Civil is completely different. Civil is a case where you're trying to get money. So that's when you hire a lawyer and you sue or you assert claims. The statute just changed. Up until November, statute began to run when a minor turned 18. So once you turned 18, the statute began to run, and then you had 3 years. I mean, till age 21, and after that, it became too late, barring some very unusual circumstances. Effective December 1st, our legislature, through the wonderful efforts of the Attorney General's office, which led the fight, increased the statute of limitations from 18 to 21 for sex abuse matters from 18 to 28, which still isn't enough, but that's, as a negotiating posture, that's as far as it can get. I mean, I know they worked hard. But just as importantly, they created a two-year window starting December 1st. So it meant from December 1st, 2019 to November 30th of 2021, if you were sexually abused when you were under 18, you can still come forward now and bring the case in that two-year period. So even if you're 60 years old now and it happened when you were six, you'd have until end of November of 2020 in order to bring the case. And that's important. So people ought to be contacting lawyers and law enforcement, even if it happened a long time ago, as long as the perpetrator's alive. Or if the institution, if there's an institution that was responsible, even for hiring somebody they knew shouldn't have been hired or not supervising somebody properly.
So how does the vicious cycle go in the Catholic Church if a priest has been sexually abusing a child? He can leave, go to another city in another.
It used to happen, not rarely, where if they got word or suspicious that they, being the leadership of a diocese, I'm talking in general, not necessarily Charlotte Diocese, they had a priest who'd been accused or who was caught in a compromising situation, or they got an informal report, they would often move him out of town to another parish, or sometimes they'd ship him out of state to another diocese. Charlotte used to have very warm relations with the Boston, Archdiocese of Boston. We took from them several people that came down here with accusations of sex abuse. The diocese said, we didn't know about it. Then the Archbishop of Boston said, yes, you did. We told you about it. So the next day in the newspaper, the diocese says, yes, we were wrong. We knew about it. Chancellor West did that.
So Charlotte, North Carolina is not the only one who's not releasing names, right?
They're one of the last ones. They're something like 170, 175 dioceses around the country. Charlotte Diocese was like the 140th. Approximately, give or take, one to release them. In May, they said, okay, we'll release it by the end of the year. So they made it by they made it by December 30th when nobody was around. And the list isn't complete. I know it's not complete.
Okay.
You know, I said I've sued them and studied them for a long time, and people provide me with information at different times and not necessarily through the lawsuit and stuff. And I do my own investigation. That list is not complete.
Because there's more than, what was it, 14 or 16?
Right. Well, first of all, the list only listed people. If they hadn't already been charged, like a Father Falwell, everybody listed was dead, which is kind of convenient because I can assure you that all the abusers I've ever served in the Charlotte Diocese are not dead. I've seen certain documents that are subject to a protective order, so I can't release the specific contents of those. So when I talk about stuff, it's stuff I know independently, and then I can only sort of
let people fill in the blanks. Is helping you with this work?
Various lawyers helped me over the years.
Okay.
Got another law firm to work with me during the case because these cases are too complicated for just one person.
And sensitive.
Oh, and sensitive, and just, you know, I might have a good opinion of myself, but it's not that high to know that I might not be wrong.
It's beneficial for someone who has been sexually abused to get some help from a trauma therapist who knows trauma. We only started talking about trauma therapists. I just started hearing about them in the past 6 or 7 years.
That term didn't exist when I started. I mean, and trying to find help for my clients back in the 80s was impossible. I mean, I'd have to call in favors from other therapists I knew that happened to treat some and just say, can you squeeze in one more client? You know, most of my clients don't have any money. and they don't have any health insurance. I mean, these are people that have not had the fortune go for them in life, so and have been terribly injured. So it's not unexpected that their life is not on the perfect trajectory, to put an understatement.
Do you know, in your lifetime of helping children in this child advocacy world you do in the law, have you ever seen any priests go to jail?
Yes. One of the ones, that, first case I took, was against the Child Diocese and Robert Urkel on behalf of Robert Price. And I can use his name because he's been bravely come forward and spoken out and authorized his name to be used. He'd been abused by Father Robert Urkel, who is an order priest who is down here serving at St. Matthew's. And he'd been sexually abused a number of years. He came to me, his parents, and he came to me. And I was convinced very early on about the case. First thing I suggested is, let's go to the police. So I do. I turn it over to them. You know, they set up a phone call from my client to Father Urkel, where they try to record it. On the second attempt, he called back and made admissions and then ultimately pled guilty and got 7+ years in prison.
I'm wondering if he could still work.
I think they've released him from the order, but the problem is with the diocese and these other places. Even if you are, like the diocese mentions you and they say, okay, now you no longer have your faculties, they still pay you. Priests who've been accused of abuse often still get paid through the priest retirement fund. Donations might go down if people knew that. And through the retirement fund, just specifically, it's designating funds to those retired priests, yet some of them may have have credible accusations against them. And they've already had actions taken against them by the diocese, not, you know, nothing to send them to criminal, but they still get paid by the diocese.
What do most people go for when they've been sexually abused? Do they go more for the criminal or they go more for the civil?
I think, from my experience, they do criminal. I mean, first of all, I'd only represented people that were willing to do criminal. It couldn't be just money. Because if there's an abuser out there, the issue isn't for me, wasn't simply getting my client money, it was to protect others. Now, other lawyers, I'm sure, have different opinions, so you could find other lawyers who say, no, we don't have to go to the police, we'll just talk and try to settle it, but that's not been the way I've operated.
When there's money involved, there's some type of, you can't talk about this,
well,
gag order.
Yes and no. There used to be. Catholic Church would always insist on confidentiality clauses on settlements. Until the Charter for the Protection of Children they passed, I think it was in 2002 or 2004, which said they could no longer make those settlements confidential, the amounts, unless the victim asked for it and there are very good reasons for it. So like they couldn't make the settlement I had with Robbie Price against Urkel and the diocese confidential. So those numbers are out there.
If you're just now tuning in, we're talking to child advocate attorney, it's Seth H. Langson. We're talking about the list of credibly accused priests that were released, and Seth says most of them are dead, if not all.
The ones that they released, they'll say deceased. I mean, there was a couple that said they've been removed. You know, it turns out, you know, they've been prosecuted. But there's nobody on there that whose name was revealed for the first time who's alive and on their list that could still be doing what they're doing, other than, you know, the ones that they've already been convicted. You know, like Father Falwell, he was charged with the crimes which my clients, you know, accused him of. He got a minor, contributing to delinquency of a minor on one of the cases, and the other one was dismissed because there's a criminal statute of limitations. So he can't be prosecuted on anything those victims say. Now, if new victims were to come forward, then he could be prosecuted anew based on what any new victim says. So that's why I strongly encourage any victims to come forward.
Come forward.
Right.
Your story.
Last I knew, he was living in Florida.
That's bizarre how they can still get a salary.
Well, what people should be asking from the diocese, not only did they release the list, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, as good as it is, as bad as it is, but what they haven't released, essential, is the assignment records of all the priests. Assignment record shows you each year this priest served in this parish. So in 2013, he was in Waynesville. 2015, he was at St. Anne's. And it goes, and you get to see. But the diocese, all the dioceses in the country, have a history of moving priests from parish to parish to parish to parish. As I said, when there are accusations made or they have suspicions. So, and a diocese doesn't keep the list, the assignment records, public. They used to have them public, available at Belmont Abbey College, and that's where I had an associate go and get them for me, get the list and print off the list for me when my first case. But now they don't have them. People have gone and tried to get them there, and they're no longer publicly available. If they release the list of all assignments of every priest that's even just on their list, it would shed a lot of light on the corruption of the leadership of the diocese. Because then you would see, okay, who is the bishop? Who was the chancellor at the time this person started getting transferred? When was the accusation first made? The accusation might have been first made long before what the diocese announces has been first made. They may have suspicions. And these are guesses. There may have been a cop who did him a favor and said, you know, get this guy out of town. You know, something like years ago. I mean, this happened elsewhere. Or the DA would say, you know, they didn't bring charges a long time ago. They say, get the heck out of town or something like that. I don't know for a fact that happened here, but it wouldn't shock me.
Since I'm not Catholic, you have to explain this to me.
I'm not Catholic either.
How much time are we leaving our kids alone with priests?
Well, less than before, because now they've got rules and the parents are more aware of the dangers of it. And it's not just with priests, it's with any adults and, you know, in sports situations, coaches, camps. I mean, you have a lot of problems with camp counselors and coaches and other schools, and athletics is a big problem. And that's also in part because they never do proper background checks. That's a whole other subject. But background checks that are done for, like, for the private sports leagues and stuff are sort of a joke.
Wow. I can remember back in high school and our gym teacher had a crush on my neighbor across the street, and I swear they were dating. But you don't think of child molestation when you're in high school.
And, you know, the background checks, what standards, you check to see whether a person has a criminal background, criminal check, record. If they don't, you say, okay. Well, the problem is a lot of people, there are jobs where they're asked to leave because of misconduct. And they're sort of given a choice. You can leave or you be fired. You leave, you know, on good terms, nobody hears anything. I've seen cases like this. I've had a case involving a teacher from Charlotte-Mecklenburg who came here from another district, who'd been run out of the other district because he'd been accused of the same thing and been told to leave. But they came to Charlotte, and he didn't have a criminal record because he'd never been charged, and Charlotte hired him, and next thing you knew, he sexually assaulted my client.
So if you don't have a criminal record, you can get a job anywhere.
Yeah, but you don't have to go back and contact, like, the former employers. One, they probably won't tell you anything because they're afraid of themselves getting sued. But, you know, you can see a pattern. If somebody's not lasting very long, it doesn't hurt to be able to get that information. Plus, the law provides that they're protected in what they tell you so long as they do it in good faith. So if I tell you so-and-so, we had accusations against so-and-so when he worked for me, I'm protected if we really did and stuff. If I was making it up and I tell the police that, then I've got a problem. But if I say, yes, yeah, so we had an accusation in 2010 against this person, here's what it was. Passing that information on, I am protected from being sued. As long as I make it in good faith.
Okay. And like you said, it's not just the Catholic churches that are molesting children. There are preschools. There are in the
sports,
sporting world.
All sorts of schools, universities. I mean, I see the issue of passing it on, covering up all levels of society. And
Does it disgust you? I mean, this work should kind of make you upset a little bit inside?
Oh, it does. That's why I stuck with it. Fueled by outrage. You know, practicing law is tough enough. So on a case where, a car accident case. Well, somebody was negligent, somebody wasn't. You settle up for some money, and that's the end of the case. I mean, obviously, lives might be ruined and stuff, but the person didn't set out to harm you. The abuser sets out to harm you.
But in the eyes of the abuser, do they really know they're harming you?
Some do, some don't. Most
some don't
care.
Some do,
some don't. I would think. You'd have to ask the experts on that. You know, we have different views. Some of them think they're treatable. I haven't found too many that I thought were treatable.
Okay. We can't talk about Harvey Weinstein either, but those stories took so long to come out. And the females, or the one female that I heard from, she must have been exhausted.
Oh, sure. You get worn down. Plus, you get attacked. You get attacked by the church. I mean, you know, my clients that came forward made accusations against priests. They were all attacked on social media by supporters of the church saying they're lying. They're just out for money. And I'd get attacked, too, saying he's just a money-hungry lawyer. Nobody waits 15 years to come forward. That sort of nonsense. They stopped those attacks. And actually, there was a Facebook page, Friends of Father Kelleher, supporters of Father Kelleher, and they made all these accusations against my client when he came forward. Father Kelleher was beloved. Once there was a newspaper article about how not only had there been a complaint placed by my client, but like five other victims had come forward, they shut down that page. Didn't apologize to my client, but they shut down the page.
Because we think we're doing the right thing, right? We're protecting our priests. We're protecting our teachers. We're protecting because we trust them. They're our neighbor.
They are. Being an altar boy is a high-risk position in a Catholic church. At least it used to be. The victims were often altar boys.
Because they would have time with them
because
alone.
There'd be a time alone with them. So it's sad to describe that position as a high-risk position, but for years and years it was.
Do you hear of more, well, you hear more stories of priests. Do you hear of any stories of nuns?
There are some. I haven't heard of any, and I don't know too many attorneys have. I know there are some. And just like there are some cases with priests involving females, the cases I know of against boys, but there are plenty of cases out there with priests against females. I just haven't had any.
So a priest takes a vow. I got to let you go after this. I know you got to go. A priest takes a vow. What does that vow look like?
It's a vow of celibacy, and I've seen it. And it's just a vow. You know, they're going to be celibate, and they'll follow the scriptures of the church, etc., the teachings of the church.
But it ain't working.
Well, it's not followed. I mean, starting with the vow of celibacy, it's observed in the breach. None of them follow it, as best I could tell. I mean, some do, and obviously I don't know them all, but we start with that.
That's a hard life,
celibacy. It's a hard celibacy. Who would choose that? But I'm not saying that's the problem for why, you know, there are a lot of priests, or a good number of priests. There may be other reasons why they're beyond my capabilities to figure it out. But the Catholic Church has been so closed and protective in covering up, more so than almost any other institution.
Yeah, lots of money involved. Any words from Pope Francis?
Oh, it's a bad thing, and we're against it. That's about as far as he goes.
Wow. Seth, if someone's listening now who has been molested by anyone, what do you suggest them to do? So they might be a little young now.
I mean, if they can, you should talk to your parents, assuming you weren't abused by a parent or a relative. And you have a good relationship with your parents. You should tell your parents or someone you trust. Start with. Then from there, you should go on when you get strength and with parents' support and encouragement, you know, to talk about going to the police or, you know, going to your schools. But the general principle is you don't go to the people you're accusing to tell them, I'm making this accusation against you. Because they're not looking to convict the person. They're not looking to get the person in trouble. They're looking to get the person out of trouble. It's okay to tell them, but after you've told the independent people first. So the investigation can begin before evidence might disappear and people disappear.
The paper trail.
Yes.
Gotta have a paper trail. Seth H. Langson, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our child advocacy attorney's been joining us this morning. Hopefully, folks learned something.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Francine Marie Show. We're popping out for a quick cup of tea, but we'll be right back.
This is my jam and jelly, y'all, on the Francine Marie Show. Spread that show out, girl. Spread it out.
Please, please do not harm us. We have come to your planet for one thing, the Francine Marie Show. It's the only content we can digest.